Good evening, and welcome to the first Republican Sheriff debate for Flagler County. My name is Patrick Giuliano, president of the Flagler County Republicans, and your moderator for this evening's discussion. I would like to acknowledge our event partners, the Flagler County Republican Club, the Flagler Federated Republican Women's Club, and the Flagler Palm Coast Forum. Tonight's debate is being broadcasted live on WNZF News Talk Radio, 1550 AM, and 106.3 FM, and we are streaming live worldwide at WNZF.com. Tonight's broadcast was made possible through the sponsorship of the following sheriff candidates: Donald Fleming, John Lamb, Rick Staley, Mark Wisnett, and Christopher Yates. We ask you, our audience, to be respectful of the candidates' answers. Each of you have come here this evening interested in the content and ready and willing to listen. We respect the time that you are here with us tonight and will make great stride to meet your expectations and exemplify why the Flagler County Young Republicans are the most energetic, engaging, and exciting group of young professionals in Flagler County. With that, we respect your passion and welcome applause when appropriate, but we kindly ask you to refrain from distracting signs of encouragement, both positive and negative. Lastly, please be mindful of and respectful of your friends and neighbors here tonight. While we cannot simply ask or answer every question tonight because there is not enough time, we encourage the candidates to continue the dialogue, continue out through this campaign, so that the voters of Flagler County are educated and informed. For the next 90 minutes, we are going to engage in a conversation with the six Republican candidates seeking the Republican nomination for the office of sheriff. The questions tonight touch upon important aspects of law enforcement, as well as certain foundations of personal principles. The discussion does not end here tonight. The discussion continues until the last ballot is casted on August 30th. Candidates invited this evening were provided with the rules and the format of our debate. Candidates will be given 2 minutes for an open remark, followed by a series of questions with responses of 1 to 2 minutes, depending on the question. All candidates will be given equal opportunity to answer the questions. If a candidate does invoke another candidate's name, intentional, unintentional, or by assumption or association, they will have 15 or 30 seconds to respond. Be mindful of everybody's time and patience, and the moderator does reserve the right to move along. Candidates, we ask you to remain in your seats and kindly just pass the microphone to one another to whomever is next. In the front of the audience are our timekeepers, who will attempt to keep us on pace and in motion. When candidates have 30 seconds left, they will hold up a white card. When candidates have 5 seconds left, you will see a red card letting you know time is up. And when the time is up, you will hear that lovely bell. With that, it does give me great pleasure to introduce to you, in alphabetical order, the candidates seeking the Republican nomination for sheriff in the August 30th Republican primary. Audience, I ask you to join me in a warm welcome for our Republican candidates, former Flagler County Sheriff Don Fleming. Come on up. Jacksonville Sheriff's Office Lieutenant John Lamb. Former Rikers Island Warden Jerry O'Gara. Yeah. Former Flagler County Undersheriff Rick Staley. Yeah. Former Charleston County Master Deputy Sheriff Mark Wisnett. Yeah. And Holly Hill Police Department Lieutenant Christopher Yates. It gives me great pleasure to introduce our candidates, and please join me in another round of applause for them. Candidates, go ahead and take your seats as we get ready to begin. All right, candidates, we have a tradition in the Flagler County Young Republicans of an icebreaker before every one of our meetings, kind of to just relax you and set the mood. So tonight, our icebreaker is, what is your favorite donut? Sheriff Hunt. And if you, we ask you to hold the microphone, answer it, and please pass it along as needed. And please keep the microphone up close.
Jelly.
Mr. Lamb.
Is it on? Apple fritter.
Unfair question. I wasn't a cop.
Hold on. Miss Stale.
Actually, I prefer a bagel, but if it's a donut, it'll be glazed.
I love jelly donuts because they're tasty, juicy, and delicious.
A good Boston cream is my favorite.
All right, thank you. And hopefully that just breaks the ice this evening and just kind of relaxes you for a good discussion that I hope we all have. So the Florida Constitution specifies that the county sheriff, part of the judicial branch, the sheriff has the duty to enforce both Florida Constitution, Florida state laws and statutes, and to provide for the security, safety, and well-being of its citizens. This is accomplished through the delivery of enforcement services, the operation of the county jail, and the provision of court security. Explain why you want to be the next Flagler County Sheriffs, and you have 2 minutes. Sheriff Fleming.
Thank you, Patrick, and thank you for the young Republicans for giving me the opportunity to be here tonight. I'm amazed at the amount of people that are here tonight, and I thank you for coming. It's very encouraging to see everybody here. As a sheriff here from 204 to 212, I took great pride in this agency. I ran a sheriff's office, I ran a jail, I ran the courts. We reduced crime 7 out of 8 years that I was in office. We established programs such as a crime suppression team, a canine team, 42 neighborhood watch programs, Citizens Police Academy, where we put citizens through the program. I take pride in what I did. And when I left the office, I thought my career was over after 37 or 38 years. But I look at the agency in the way it is now, and I equate that to like the sinking of the Titanic. And I look at the men and women of the agency when I see them when they're riding around. Their head is down most of the time. And I take pride with those men and women. They were well-trained people when I was in office. They did their job, and we had a good agency. I believe the future of this agency is in the next 5 years to formulate what we have to have as a part of the program. We have to build a bridge of trust between the community and the agency. We have to restore the pride of the deputies, of the men and women who work at the agency. And we have to restore training to the agency that will make them a better agent, better deputy that's out on the road. I also believe that a better trained deputy, a better educated deputy, and a happy home is a way of having a happy life as a deputy in the agency. So I believe that some of the things that we look at right now, I want to raise the Titanic back up again, put the men and women back into the agency, give them some pride, run the agency like it should be run. And I believe also that it doesn't go from the top down. It goes with everybody in the agency. They have to have an input. Thank you so much.
Mr. Lamb.
Good evening, Patrick, Young Republicans. Thank you for having us tonight. And I'm also pleased with the attendance. One thing I look at when I look at me as a candidate for sheriff is engaged, efficient, and effective. One of our core values in the law enforcement profession is community-focused. We can't be community-focused unless you engage a community. I'm looking forward to bringing new, excited, innovative ideas to continuously engage the community through monthly sheriff's walks, SHACO Sheriff's Advisory monthly meetings. That is exciting stuff to constantly reach out to the community and let them know what resources the sheriff's office has for them to stay informed. Online mapping, Citizens Academy, the ride-along program. Efficient. The Jacksonville Sheriff's Office was the very first law enforcement agency to introduce continuous improvement philosophies into its agency, Lean and Six Sigma. I was a unit commander that for 2.5 years certified in continuous improvement, identifying efficiencies within an agency to save the money, to be good stewards of the money. As an assistant chief in logistics in our $350 million budget, I had an impact on that, on the operation cost. Also, I applied those to fighting crime when I became the assistant chief of a large zone. Provided police service to 192,000 people with 166 deputy sergeants and lieutenants under me. DMAIC, define, measure, analyze, approve, and control. Those are innovative ideas to fight crime. I'm looking forward to bringing those new modern police techniques to Flagler County. As a resident of Flagler County now, I'm very excited to be engaged, efficient, and effective. Thank you.
Mr. O'Gara.
As a warden on Rikers Island, I have massive managerial experience enforcing criminal law, overseeing investigations, arrests. I was in charge of manning many court facilities, quite a few huge jails on Rikers Island. That was as a warden. I had 1,400 staff assigned to me in my largest command. Then I was assigned to the commissioner's office twice, the two commissioners. There I acted as liaison to outside agencies. I gave advice on policy and procedures. And it was there where we had 10,800 officers and 14,000 inmates to deal with. We had to tend to their needs, both make it a safe working environment for the staff and also the care, custody, and control of the inmates. After that, on 9/11, I was the division chief on that day. I got the phone call. And I executed the emergency response operations flawlessly. The next day, I was down at Ground Zero during the search and rescue. And after that, I volunteered at the temporary morgue, and I won't tell you what happened there. But every command I was in, we had historic reductions in violence, overtime, and sick leave by staff. The sick leave for staff used to be 22 days a year. I brought it down to 12 because people enjoyed coming to work again. If you could wrap your head around that, that a leader being able to get people to be glad to come to Rikers Island to work, that's what I want to do here. I want to make it exciting again to work for this agency. I think those are my qualifications to be your chief administrator and sheriff of this agency. Thank you.
Mr. Staley.
Well, I'm Rick Staley, and I also want to thank the Young Republicans and the other clubs for hosting this tonight. The first thing that I want to tell you is what I'm not, and I'm not a politician. I'm a 41-year cop in Florida, still certified, and most of that, except for 3 years, has been in a sheriff's office. Sheriff's offices are very unique in the state of Florida. As Patrick mentioned in the question, they're very unique responsibilities for a sheriff's office. I went right out of high school, started policing, put myself through college while working full-time. I have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, a master's degree in justice administration, at the same time working full-time. I graduated from the FBI Academy, graduated from the Southern Police Institute. What is unique, I think, about me is that most of my career was in the fourth largest agency in the state of Florida and the 13th largest agency in the nation. Within 16 years, I rose to second in command of the Orange County Sheriff's Office, where I commanded 2,000 men and women and a $120 million budget. It's also where I was shot on duty saving the life of a deputy sheriff. The governor gave me the Medal of Heroism for that. The agency gave me the Medal of Valor and Purple Heart. I know what it's like to be a street cop. I lead by example. When I served as undersheriff in two different agencies, you would see me out on a Friday night on patrol. I actually made an arrest. The jail was shocked that the undersheriff made an arrest. So I lead by example. I've done the job, and I'm sure as we go further in questions, you'll hear more about my experience. So thank you.
Mr. Wisnett.
Hello, Mark Wisnett. Tell you a little bit of history about myself. I fell in love with this area back in 2003. My family owns property in the Hammocks. After 9/11, I used to come down to Flagler County and travel on my military duties on my off time. Fell in love with this community. I'm totally committed to this community. My wife and I made this our home. We're here to stay, and we're totally dedicated to this community because we have a love for Flagler County. It's not what I can do. It's what we can do. We care or we would not be here today. And I thank you for everyone coming out. We're going to talk about community. We're going to talk about accountability and trust. And those are just not a slogan. It's a love for this community and being totally committed to the community, being totally committed to the Constitution and preserving the Constitution while preserving the rights and freedoms of the people in Flagler County and also the United States. And accountability. It runs both ways. We're going to identify the stakeholders in the community, work hand in hand, side by side. And we're going to bring back trust to the community by empowering the deputies I am not going to manage leaders. They became leaders when they raised their right hand and said they were going to uphold the Constitution. And that's what we're going to preserve. We're going to have scenario-based training. I came from the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. And we're going to have good, wholesome training to make sure the men and women out there that's protecting us every day are going to be safe. I will be a sheriff to wear a uniform, a camcorder, and a vest. And I will stand side by side and behind the people committed to this community and committed to this organization to make it a safer place. Thank you.
Mr. Gates.
First off, I'm fighting a cold, so if I can't talk very well, I apologize ahead of time. I would like to thank the Young Republican Club. Patrick, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. Currently, I'm the operations commander in a small city called Holly Hill. A lot of you know that. What that entails, running everything except for our CID, our investigators. We border Daytona Beach at one of its worst areas, right there at Mason Avenue. It is a constant battle to fight off the unwanted residents coming over that boundary and coming into our community and committing crimes and causing other ruckus. That's what I'm going to bring to this county, is we are going to fight every day to protect you. Your safety is my main priority. I was born and raised in Ormond Beach, 8 miles from the county line. I'm 39 years old. I've been in the community for a long time. I know this community, and I want to protect this community. You know, I don't have all the experience that some of these gentlemen up here do, but I do have the heart and the dedication to give you 24/7, 365 service. I'm currently a FDLE, Florida Department of Law Enforcement instructor. I train the men and women of the Holly Hill Police Department on a daily basis, not only on ethics, but on safety, and to do the best job that you can for the community and love where you work. That's what I'm going to bring here. I want to thank everybody again for showing up. We're going to have some questions and answers. The only thing I ask you is be open-minded, listen to them, Google people, do everything you can to get the best, well-rounded decision you can make. Thank you.
Candidates, the next question is a one-minute response. Each of you have served in some capacity of law enforcement throughout your career. And the public has a certain perception of law enforcement, but the reality of it is completely different. For the last several months, you have told your political story on why you're running for sheriff. Tonight, we want to hear the personal story and hear about the person behind the badge. So throughout your career, I'm sure you've come across many things, and I hope you tonight will enlighten us in how you can humanize the badge and shed light on you, the person running for sheriff.
Thank you. In my 37 or 38 years in law enforcement, I always took pride in the agency that I ran. I was a chief of police for 17 years up in New Jersey and a sheriff down here for 8. When I retired, the agency was in good stead. But the men and women of the agency all left or been fired or retired. We had almost 120-some-odd people in the last 2 years leave this agency one way or the other, decimated. Marriages were ruined. Houses were closed on. I sat back and I looked at these things and I said to myself, I cannot allow this to go on. I cannot allow these people with their lives and their careers with 27, 24, 23, 19, 20 years in service. Men and women who put their lives on the line every day is something that I take very seriously. And I want to take that one more step and restore this agency to back to where it was, so that these people who work the streets, who work with the citizens, are proud to come to work and do the job. Thank you.
Mr. Lamb.
Well, with me, it all started back when I was 12 years old. I had a call to service when I started my own lawnmower business. I enjoyed serving people and providing a service and interacting with people. that later continued when I joined the United States Navy. That call to service was a great opportunity for me to work beside some of the greatest men and women in the armed forces. When I got out of the military, I went back to Jacksonville. And at a young age of 22, I started joined the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, and I enjoyed that thoroughly. The day in and day out, so helping people responding to calls for service is very exciting. That need to service was the drive that I enjoy. I am coming to the end of my 23-year career with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. I still have that passion. I still have that desire. I still work the streets of Jacksonville. I provide a great professional service to them, and I'm very excited about bringing that same professional, current law enforcement to Flagler County as your next sheriff. Thank you.
Mr. O'Gara.
I'm in agreement 100% with Don. I was appalled by the treatment of career law enforcement officers. And being an American citizen, being in Florida where anybody can be the sheriff. Now, I'm not encouraging any more candidates, okay? Anybody can be it. I can be it. I worked in an agency that all these men's agencies could fit into. I could run this facility. I could run this department. I have a passion to make this place the paradise that I relocated to, that my parents relocated to 20 years ago. And I've been paying taxes here for 18 years. And I moved here 9 years ago with my family. I want to make this a safe place for my family, my friends, and the community.
Mr. Staley.
Well, I'm going to tell you about myself and my life growing up and why I chose a career in law enforcement. I'm a second-generation lawman. My dad was a Winter Park police officer in the 1950s. He left that after a few years and was a carpenter. And I remember as a kid growing up when my dad's business failed. It was called Royal Cabinets. And the only reason we ate was because my grandparents brought us food. And I remember that vividly. Shortly after that, I became a police explorer, which kind of cemented my interest in law enforcement. And at age 18, I was one of the first 18-year-old cops in Florida. And I think one of the highlights of anything I've done in my career was when you help that victim or you prevent a crime and you save someone's life. And I've done that. And I think that's the best part, is about providing the service to the community. The men and women that work with you, some of them came here from Orlando to support me tonight.
Mr. Wisnett.
I've had the privilege of serving in law enforcement since 1989. I decided to pursue my career in law enforcement after my mother and father were victimized with their place of business, were broken into three times. The second time, their insurance was canceled because of high liability. I have a passion to help the people in the community. I have a love for the community. Granted, it may be people that don't agree with my views and may not like me, but I'm going to like you back as a sheriff. I'm going to be a straight shooter because we're totally committed to this community, like I was totally committed after 9/11, being recalled back to active duty, serving in Operation Noble Eagle and Iraqi Freedom. And I want to serve you as a sheriff. It's because what we can do together. If we come together, we're powerful, just like our nation coming together. Thank you.
And candidates, just as a reminder, make sure you have that microphone close by. Otherwise, we won't hear you on the radio.
I'm going to have to talk quick on this one. I got into law enforcement because when I was 9 years old, my grandmother passed away, and all of her belongings, rings, everything was given to my mother. Shortly after, about a month later, our house was broke into, and somebody stole the safe that had all that jewelry and belongings in it, and it crushed my mom. There was a gentleman, a deputy for Volusia County. He's retired now. His name's Rick Conway. He showed up, and with my mom being hysterical, I remember him patting me on the shoulder, and he said, "Son, I'm going to do everything I can to help you and your mom." Shortly after, probably 3 months, 95% of that jewelry was found, and the sight I saw in my mother's face, I said, "One day I want to do that for somebody." And in my 12-year career in law enforcement, I've been thankful to be able to do that for two other families. And to be honest with you, I sat there and cried with them because it brought back when I was 8 years old. Thank you.
So let's talk about the incumbent sheriff. So Sheriff Jim Manfrey assumed the office of sheriff in January of 2013 after an eight-year hiatus. Now, much has happened in those 4 years, but the six of you made a conscious decision to run for sheriff and to essentially change the course of direction for the sheriff's office. Essentially, you are asking the voters not just to hire you, but why to fire the incumbent. So tonight I ask you, what is your call for change? And let's start down at the other end and work our way back. So, Mr. Yates. And this is a one-minute response.
Thank you, Patrick. Really, the main thing is he has embarrassed this county and the citizens that live in here. To me, when I open the newspaper up in the morning or I see on TV another article of our Flagler County Sheriff having ethical and other violations against him, I'm embarrassed as a citizen of Flagler County. I promise that when I step into that office, I will give you 100%. I have had, numerous commendations over my career, not only law enforcement, but in the private sector, of strong ethical and moral beliefs. I will hold every deputy to those, including myself. And as a way back, I would like for the community to be able to hold us accountable as well.
Mr. Westman.
I met the sheriff about 3 weeks ago, shook the sheriff's hand, and informed him I am not running against him. I am running for the office of sheriff because it's what we can do together as a group. I'm not going to cast stones. I'm going to let the voters decide come election day when they cast their vote, who do you put your trust in? And being totally accountable, I am not going to pass the buck. I'm going to be accountable. And I'm also going to require the deputies to be accountable. It's a two-way street, having the stakeholders in the community working together because we love this community, and we're going to protect this community, and we're not going to be victimized. The people that are causing drug problems and breaking into our areas and so forth and affecting our loved ones, they're going to be the prey, and we're going to take back this community. Thank you.
Mr. Staley.
Well, I'm running for the community and for the agency because I can tell you that I'm fortunate enough that I do not need this job for financial reasons, which allows me to be a very independent sheriff and make the right decisions for the right reasons for the community and for the agency. When I was there for 2 years, I learned firsthand that the current sheriff does not listen to advice. And as a result, I think everyone in this room and that's listening have seen the articles that have written. I was the buffer between him and the employees for 2 years. And at one point, it was enough, and I left. And wasn't even planning to run for sheriff at that point. But I started receiving requests from the community to run, and I looked at what I could bring to the table, and I felt I would make a good candidate for sheriff, which is why I'm running.
Mr. O'Gara.
The current sheriff does what he does because he can. There's no policy in place to prevent him from doing that. I will institute a conflict of interest policy that will prevent him and his bosses giving gifts, taking gifts, using taxpayer-funded property for personal and political gains. The second thing I'll do is remove politics from the office, create job safety for the offices so there's no influence in the disciplinary process, in the hiring process, in the promotion process. Very simple thing here. He does what he does because he can. I will change all that.
Mr. Lamb.
I will keep my private life unsullied as an example to all. Maintain a courageous calm in the face of danger, scorn, or ridicule. Develop self-restraint and be constantly mindful of the welfare of others. Honest in thought and deed in both my personal and professional life. I will be exemplary in obeying the laws of the land and the regulations of my department. That's the second paragraph in the Law Enforcement Code of Ethics that every law enforcement officer recites in the police academy.
not to cast stones, but some people forget that. We need to constantly remind ourselves. We do not need to enact a conflict of interest plan. Commission on Florida Accreditation Standard 11.08 already has it dictated. Flagler County Sheriff's Office is an accredited agency. We need to ensure that they're following the plan. Lead by example, and that's what I'm hoping to fulfill. Thank you.
Mr. Fleming.
Sometimes I get the feeling that this is sort of like Rocky IV between Jim Manfrey and myself. I probably know him better than his wife knows him. And I would look at doing things differently. You know, I've been a manager. I manage by people who put their input into the agency. They have a say into the agency. So when they put some idea forward that we like, we go with it. They buy into the program. I'm going to restore respect. I'm going to restore dignity, and I'm going to restore professionalism. We're going to have the best training division that we've ever had. We're going to have a motor unit that's going to be expanded to handle more traffic that's coming into Florida, into Flagler County. And we're going to reestablish a narcotics division. When I heard that we don't have one right now, I think the statistics in FDLE will tell you about 80% of all crimes that are committed have some relation to narcotics. And I will encourage my men and women to go into the communities around us to write and arrest people. Thank you.
So, gentlemen, this legislative session, Governor Rick Scott signed into law House Bill 93, which requires law enforcement agencies that permit its law enforcement officers to wear body cameras, that the agency now has to establish policies and procedures addressing the proper use, maintenance, and storage of the body cameras and the data recorded. Currently, Flagler County Sheriff's Office does have the body cameras in use. And as of October, 18 law enforcement agencies in the state have it in place, with another 10 in a pilot program. Now, there has been we have seen technology improve where it was first the dash cameras, and now it's the body cameras. So from each of you, how do you see the body cameras as a viable tool in law enforcement? So, Mr. Lamb, we'll start with you and come to my left.
Thank you. You're exactly right, Patrick. It is a tool. If it's used inappropriately, then it's a damaged tool. The body cameras can be an excellent source of information, but I just want to warn people about the use of body cams, that is not going to be the tell-all of a situation that goes down. Body camera does not catch everything, does not catch some voice inflection, eye movement, characteristics that law enforcement officers are trained to pick up on. So it's a great tool, reference complaints and officer-involved shootings, which we just had two in Jacksonville. Three of my guys were involved. So body cameras have been really helpful at that particular situation. So they are a great tool, but we need to ensure that we're being compliant with the policies that we put in place and ensuring that we're using them properly and then use it as a tool for information gathering. Thank you.
Mr. O'Gara.
The correction department since 1983 has been using cameras on anticipated uses of force. You train people properly, they'll act properly. Not a problem. I don't have any problem with the cameras. I could probably make a greater case to have cameras on the sheriff himself. But I won't go there. I agree with John's assessment of the camera and its use and misuse.
Mr. Staley.
Well, cameras are not perfect, but they're a sign of the times. Everybody's videotaping law enforcement at every encounter, so this now gives the opportunity for the public to see what law enforcement saw from their eyes. What I would have done, and I was there when these cameras were purchased, is I preferred a different system, not only the body camera, but the one that ties with the car so you get a split screen, so that when your blue lights go on, your speed hits a certain speed limit, they automatically go on. And that's the problem with the current system. The policies are in place, but it requires a deputy to hit a button to record it. Now, it does record back for a few seconds, but if they forget to push that button, you'll lose the encounter. So it's not a perfect system, but it certainly is better than nothing. It helps with criminal activity, DUI arrests, those kind of things, improving the cases. Thank you.
Mr. Wisnett.
One I believe in the body cameras. As your sheriff, I will wear a body camera because we're going to set the example and lead by example. We're also going to train to any deficiencies that we see for training to save the officers' lives out there because they have to preserve the Constitution. They're at a disadvantage of wearing a gun on their side when the person that wants to take their life doesn't have to follow the rules. We're not going to ridicule the officers out there until we get all the facts. Not what we just catch on camera is all the facts. And as your sheriff, I will ask the legislators to support where Flagler County does not get stuck with the entire bill. Thank you.
Mr. Yates.
When it comes to the body cameras, the agency I work for now currently does not use them. Because of the changes in legislature and the changes in evidence collection and storage and what you can and cannot, they haven't come out with, to me, 100% fixed package. We are looking at the cameras. Flagler County Sheriff's Office does currently have the camera system. Talking to some of the deputies, they're not against it. They just don't like some of the things that have been used or that they've been used for as far as holding them accountable in situations instead of, like Mr. Wisenot said, taking a situation and training to combat that deficiency or to help that officer or deputy in the situation that they were in. As far as legislation goes with the body cameras, a lot of agencies are holding back because they're waiting for the presidential or the federal government to do grants and stuff because it is an expensive thing to not only the taxpayers, but to the agency.
Mr. Fleming.
Thank you, Matt. Body cameras is nothing more than a tool used by law enforcement. It works for DUIs, it works for officer safety, but it also works for the citizen safety that we have. In today's world of social media, I always used to tell my deputies all the time, assume you're being videotaped every time you're out there. They go out there to do a job. They do a professional job, and a camera will back that up every time. I believe that any tool that can help law enforcement, any tool that can make a deputy safer or a citizen safer, I think is essential to have and we should have.
Gentlemen, the next question I'm going to give you a two-minute response on. So law enforcement has come under increased scrutiny. Especially from a movement called Black Lives Matters. We have witnessed across our nation both protests both in civil disobedient and riots. In a town of Ferguson, Missouri, we had three waves of riots, August 2014, November 14, and August 2015. In Baltimore, Maryland, riots lasted 2 weeks, prompting a response from the National Guard, and even causing Major League Baseball to prohibit fans from entering a Baltimore Orioles versus Chicago White Sox game. The first time ever in history where fans were not allowed to attend a major sporting event. To make matters worse, we have seen law enforcement officers become targets, including two New York City police officers, Detective Wenjin Liu and Rafael Ramos, who were executed in their patrol vehicles as a matter of retaliation. Mr. Wisnett, the people of Charleston certainly saw tragedy, but the people really responded differently, and credit is given to Nikki Haley for keeping it together. And this could have been you there as this was your previous home. So about a year ago, we saw a deranged young man enter the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church. He prayed with the very folks that he then turned the gun on. Had you been the sheriff then, or had that situation happened here? Explain how you could have managed that obvious hate crime and maintained relationships to prevent riots.
I knew Reverend Pitney, so don't mean to get emotional. Back in our community, there again is working with the stakeholders and working with the churches and so forth and bringing the churches together and being transparent, not allowing the media. Sometimes the media does not always portray what the total truth is. By having stakeholders in the community, which Sheriff Al Cannon did very well, and the leaders of Charleston County bringing the community together, and it's their community, not having the people that were not involved that just basically sometimes protest to protest, and they don't even realize what they're protesting against. What they were able to do was bring that community together by the love of the community on unfortunate events. Everything happens for a reason. I currently work at the state hospital. And what I would like to answer is to make sure that someone does not come in and take the lives that we love together. We need to have an integration system whenever the mentally ill come back in society, because a lot of people are highly functional, but they have a problem. And when they're reintegrated back in society, we need to make sure we have a watchful eye and a caring eye to make sure that we do not have a situation like this. And as your sheriff, it gets to the point, if we do have riots and so forth, which I prefer not to, I will stand the line there with the community and be behind the deputies. Hopefully it will never get to that point, because of the experience. We have a love for this community. I have a love still for Charleston. And those leaders worked together. When they were on the state house, all the leaders were on the state house when they were protesting flag, and they should have been protesting. How can we prevent another person from taking lives that do matter, because all lives matter? And I pray that nothing ever happens here in Flagler County like that. Thank you.
Mr. Fleming, prior to your departure in 2012 as our sheriff, there was an incident in the B section where the deputies shot and killed a machete-wielding, an active combatant subject. Can you discuss how the agency at the time handled that situation?
Yes, I remember that incident, and it was very unfortunate that it happened. But what we tried to do, we tried to get with the stakeholders immediately through the community. We met with pastors, we met with church members, we met with family members, and we sat down and we talked and we tried to air everything out that happened. It was an unfortunate situation, but the officers were justified in their shooting according to Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and I backed them up 100% on that. But I believe that anytime you have an unfortunate situation, whether it be a citizen or a law enforcement officer that is killed, it's a crushing blow to not only the family, the people, but also the entire community. So we have to establish a bridge between the community leaders, and the sheriff's office, so we have a continual thing where we train our officers better for the use of force, where we train our officers better for domestic violence, where we train our officers better for all the high liability causes of law enforcement. I believe that a situation such as that was an unfortunate situation, but the deputy was in fear of his life. The man had a machete. We went forward. We met with the family. We met with the pastors, and we ironed it out, and we didn't have any riots. We worked it well. Thank you.
Now, Mr. Staley, upon you taking the office as undersheriff, this same situation became your issue as well, because it happened right at the time where we had gone through the transition process. Can you discuss one of the specific issues with documentation? Can you discuss how the agency handled that issue to prevent what we would later know to become a Baltimore Ferguson riot? Can you just discuss that for us?
Well, let me go back in history first, and I'll answer that question. As a young deputy sheriff, I was in a riot in Orlando. It's the only riot Orlando's had. It resulted after a arrest by an Orlando police officer. And my experience has been is that while an arrest in a law enforcement action typically triggers a riot event, it usually has much more underlying factors, such as economic issues, employment opportunities, or people that don't feel like they're getting a piece of the American pie. That's usually what the ultimate trigger flashpoint, the underlying factor in the flashpoint is a police action. The way to prevent the riots is to build the community relationships and those partnerships before an incident happens. Because in law enforcement, invariably, an incident is going to happen. And you need to have the trust of the community so that they know that the information that they are receiving is factual. And that's what we did while I was under sheriff for 2 years. I wasn't here with the incident that occurred. I lived here. I've lived here for 10 years, and I was aware of it, but I was not intimately involved in that incident because I came in as under sheriff about 3 weeks afterwards. So you build a relationship beforehand because at some point, sometime, something's going to happen. And I can tell you that when I came in as under sheriff, this agency was not equipped to handle a riot. They had 10 deputies that had never been trained. They only had equipment for 10 people. We bought the appropriate gear to protect the deputies for the entire uniform patrol division for that. So thank you.
Mr. Lamb, there are numerous stories in Jacksonville where there has been an officer-involved shooting, more recent in the Springfield section of Jacksonville. That has kind of spurred some community discussion about this same issue. Had this issue happened here, and you were sheriff, talk us through how you would handle this issue if we had those similar headlines.
Well, actually, that was one of my officers who was involved in an officer-involved shooting. Look, it's violent out there. There are dangerous people out there. There is a true evil in the world. And this law enforcement profession is one of the bastions of hope to actually defend against that evil. All right? So with that said, incidents happen. Ferguson situation was already going downhill before that happened. The community, there was no trust there. Talk about building bridges. The bridges are already built here in Flagler County. All right, look, I've walked many neighborhoods and I've talked to many people. There's a lot of great discussion going on. We need to strengthen them. That's what we need to do. How we handled that situation was information. Purpose and meaning. People need to understand the profession of law enforcement and what we encounter every day. Ladies and gentlemen, people don't call us up to say, hey, I'm having a great time with my family. Come over and enjoy it. Or my family and I are getting along really, really good, and we want y'all to share in that experience. No, they call us up when there's a crisis in their life. Okay, we encounter that every day, but yet we still respond, and we provide professional service. It's that professional service I want to continue to build upon, to provide that service to the community and build and engage in that purpose and meaning and understanding what we do and why we do. That Citizens Academy is a great tool to educate the community on the life and profession of law enforcement. So continuing to strengthen the bridges and communicate the purpose and meaning between law enforcement and the community and having a seat at the table. It's like I said, all lives matter. Respect for others, community focus. Two of the greatest core values that we follow. Respect for others, that's everyone. People within our agency, people within our community. And worthy of trust. We need to be trustful so that when we pass this information, they trust us, that we are giving them valid information. And let the facts lead us to the obvious conclusion when it comes to an officer-involved shooting. So I look forward to sharing that information with the community and constantly building on that trust. Thank you.
Mr. Yates, there was a fatal shooting of an unarmed gentleman, Derek Cruz, that caused protest outside of the Volusia County Sheriff's Office. Now, there were signs calling for police officers, calling them murderers. There were signs up claiming, hands up, don't shoot. Now, this incident occurred in Deltona, but Volusia County Sheriff Ben Johnson intervened at that time. Had this same incident occurred under your administration, how would you have handled this situation?
If I'm, privileged enough to become your next sheriff, the first thing I'm going to do is implement a monthly meeting with all pastors and, as some of the candidates are saying, the stakeholders in the community. We're going to review all use of forces, any type of issue that happens in the community that needs to be discussed. So we're going to have a dialogue with them ahead of time. So if a situation like that happened, they're going to know that the sheriff's office is on the up and up. They'll be able to come in and talk with us. The information flow will be accurate and correct. There will not be anything that's held unless it's pertinent to the investigation at that time. So there's not going to be any, is the sheriff's office holding anything, or are they preventing us from knowing? The community has to have faith in our sheriff's office. The deputies, they do an outstanding job. I've had to use them several times since I've lived in this community. It's not the deputies' problem. It's above. It needs to be corrected, and that will restore the trust and dedication and everything that the community has in the sheriff's office. I want to praise the deputies for the job they do, because they're doing it out there with a big microscope on their back. They're being, you know, criticized for every little thing they do. It's a hard job out here. I do it daily. I'm not a desk jockey, as I like to call it. I walk out. I work with my guys every day. I could be that officer that is involved in that shooting and being criticized and everything for my actions. I'm not going to be just sitting there holding judgment over them. The community will know everything. Thank you.
Mr. O'Gara, the New York Times reported in May of 1994 a story entitled The Inmates, Gangs of Rikers Island. According to the story, there was increased violence among African-American and Hispanics. Oftentimes, tensions involved other inmates and caused harm to deputies. I'm sorry, to correction officers. Walk us through how you manage the situation and manage the racial tensions.
Well, I could actually talk to what happens on the street, too. I'll get to that. We have to be bold enough as a community to institute long-term mental health facilities once again. It was Geraldo Rivera made all these facilities go away. I was talking to a mental health professional. His father was a mental health professional, and his father was. I said, what do we do with these guys that's such evil in their eyes that they have this satisfaction in their eyes when they're stabbing a man who's begging for his life? He said, Jerry, there's nothing we can do. Their brains are broken. We have to find a place for these people where their brains are broken to put them. If it's in a community and a riot comes about as a result of this, majority of the people are barricaded in their homes. They're petrified to come out. They're petrified of the same people. The people that are rioting, well, that's why you have a police force. You have a show of force, and you give equal force. In New York City, that's what we did to rioters. We contained them. We talked to the people, the leaders, the religious leaders and the civic leaders. They were on our side. There's no difference. People want to be safe. But I think we need to get into the schools and teach the kids. It's not okay to call the cops if your mom grabs you. It's not okay to throw rocks at the cops. We have to start when they're young. So when they get into their teen and their adrenaline starts flowing, that they don't act out irrationally. We have to get control in the community. And those getting to the officers, well, what we do is we monitor. We created a gang intelligence unit. We put designations on the inmates. We separate them. Sometimes we put them in an area, and we put them with equal amount of gang members. It's almost like a mutual self-destruction thing. We put them in the area so they won't war against each other. Usually they're cowards. They won't war if they're outnumbered. Only if they have greater numbers, they'll do these things. And that's rioters too. When they have great numbers, you can guarantee that they're going to try something. We'll be there to make sure they don't.
Candidates, as a follow-up one-minute response question, there's a new term being circulated around the law enforcement community known as the Ferguson effect. The Ferguson effect is a term to what the proponents claim is a causal link to increase in crime rates in a number of major U.S. cities. Due to police force being subject to high levels of scrutiny, and this term has been criticized by some academics, politicians, including President Barack Obama. As sheriff of Flagler County, how do you prevent and discourage the Ferguson effect within this county? And Mr. O'Gara, we'll start with you, sir.
Well, they're almost identical questions. The Ferguson effect, you have strong communications with the religious leaders and the community. You have strong communications with the kids in school because they're most likely to participate. You have to talk to the parents to make sure they know where their kids are. We all remember that one lady who started beating her son. We need more of that around here. She was going to the riot. She whacked him a couple of times, and she probably saved him a sentence or two. It's not rocket science, folks. It's communication, and it's being aware of where our kids are and what they're up to, and it's about identifying instigators and keeping an eye on them.
Mr. Staley.
Well, for the audience and the listeners, the Ferguson effect is defined as law enforcement not being proactive as a result of all this increased attention or people looking at them. That's what the Ferguson effect is. And Hillsdale College just did a great study on this effect. But I think the way that you prevent it is by having a sheriff that will back his people and will stand there side by side and look into cases and complaints fairly and know that when they're right, you're going to back them. When they've made a small mistake, you're not going to kill them. They don't need to be worried about their job. They need to be out there serving the public and the community and stopping the suspicious people, legally, of course, and then going from there and making arrest if that's what's necessary.
Mr. Wisnett. Same question, sir.
You're going to know your deputy. We're going to have a residential deputy, which is going to open up a dialogue with the community. That deputy is going to work in that zone. And as your sheriff, I'm going to work hand in hand with different zones in the community. Under the Sheriff Citizen Interactive Committee, which is a committee with a pulse and a heartbeat, the heartbeats that we have here, we're going to know our community. In return, it works a two-way street. Your community needs to be involved. We need to be involved to identify the people that are here, the people that are haters, that don't have a vested interest in our community, that hate law enforcement, that hate us. This is not a home for them. This is our home. We're going to take pride in our organization. We're going to empower the deputies to be leaders. They are leaders. They preserve the Constitution. They preserve our rights to be safe at our home. And you're going to feel safe because we're going to have the pulse of the community coming together as one. That's true power. Thank you.
Mr. Yates.
It's sad, but it is happening. Law enforcement, they're so afraid to do their job, they're not doing their job because of what's going on in society. Your law enforcement officers need to be in the community. We'll have community neighborhood watch meetings, community involvement, walking the streets, having barbecues on weekends, doing everything to build that bridge between the sheriff's office and the community. Excuse me. A cop should not be afraid to do their job anymore. We go out there, we risk our lives to protect the citizens of the community we serve. If the community does not back the sheriff's office or the police department, whatever it is, there's a problem, and that has to be fixed. Right now, I believe that Palm Coast or Flagler County has a little bit of that issue. The citizens are not happy with the sheriff's office right now. We have to fix that. Sorry. Well, my time's up, so I'll stop now.
Mr. Fleming.
In the term proactive, when you're looking law enforcement around, if a deputy or a law enforcement officer feels that he's being backed up by his people, by the powers to be, he'll be proactive. Right now in Flagler County, I think they're more reactive than they are proactive. And I think there's a great deal of things that occur in a community, in a neighborhood that has an effect on that. The economic system that we have, the poverty, the unemployment, the breakdown of the family, the breakdown of religion, all of these things pay a factor into how law enforcement got tagged with this thing not being proactive. I have never worked with an agency that wasn't proactive, and I don't intend to do it again.
Mr. Lamb.
Well, as I stated earlier, the Ferguson situation was already spiraling out of control before that even started. The body cams will address the information on that and hopefully it answer a lot of the questions of what happened in that situation. I think getting that information out quickly could have resolved a lot of that. But strengthening those bridges is important. That community engagement, that E I talked about, the engagement piece, the core value of community focus, sheriff's walks. Once a month, I'm dedicated to walk a different community in Flagler County. The officers and supervisors walk with me, and elected officials are invited. We're going to talk about problems within that community, specific to that community, to the R section, to the double L section, to the Z, F, whatever section we're walking, Flagler Beach, Hammock. we're going to talk about and what resources the sheriff's office has to keep that engagement going. The lines of communication need to be constantly kept open. And the monthly ShadCo meetings I mentioned, that is a great opportunity for people to come and stay engaged and find out what's going on specific to their community. And also tell us what they're seeing, because they are the eyes and the ears. So I'm looking forward to building those relationships in Flagler County. Thank you.
The Daytona Beach News Journal published a rather lengthy special report this year called Shots Fired. They printed that police shoot someone in Florida on average once every 3 days. They wanted to draw a line that the FBI and no statewide agency does not track the frequency of the use of physical deadly force by law enforcement agencies. A stat used by the Daytona News Journal was that in 2013 and 14, Florida law enforcement agencies shot at least 249 people, and out of 162 of those shootings, they were fatal. Law enforcement faces enormous risk when they put on their uniform. While investigations occur after the use of deadly physical force, we have witnessed socialized and tactical armchair quarterbacking of this situation at hand. This has deterred law enforcement from using and exercising the use of physical deadly force when it is essentially needed, and cautioned them in the performance of their duties out of fear of public ridicule and judicial activism of indictments. Just this week, Mr. Yates, we saw news stories in Volusia County of an officer involved in a shooting. The suspect was reaching for a knife, causing officers to open fire. Same situation happens here in Flagler County when a deputy is involved or is engaged in a situation where the use of deadly physical force has occurred. How would you ensure public perception and law enforcement interest is maintained? And candidates, you have 1 minute for this response. Yes, please.
The incident that happened in Volusia County recently, God, I'm sorry about that. It's a tragic event. You had a mentally ill person who decided to charge out a deputy or three deputies with a knife. It was caught on footage from a citizen that happened to be parked behind that was stuck in traffic. With body-worn cameras, it's going to be a lot more of that situation is going to be captured. So it's going to be visible just like it is now from the vision or the point of view from the citizen behind. It's all going to be open to everybody. They're going to be able to know all the facts. Florida Department of Law Enforcement is going to come in and handle all the investigation. A sheriff's office or a municipality should not investigate their own shootings. You have a third party come in, handle everything as far as the investigation go, and then once the investigation is done, then the department can make recommendations on what happens if there's any ill will found or anything. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Weston expanded upon this conversation last month. A North Charleston police officer was indicted in the fatal shooting of Walter Scott, a suspect who fled police after a traffic stop. The officer was immediately terminated following the release of video footage. This issue now is a complex matter for the courts. What I'd like for you to explain is when deadly physical force is justified and excessive.
One thing people do not realize, as law enforcement officers, we have to make split-second decisions that carry lifetime consequences. We're going to train to a proficiency, not a standard, based upon the Constitution of the Fourth Amendment, which we're going to preserve. By having realistic training based upon the deadly force policy and the use of force policy, and have a clear understanding that we're going to train constantly, not just to a standard, to a proficiency, that we're going to save the lives of police officers. My partner was killed in 1991, Joe Alba, by a person who was unarmed, that didn't have to play by the rules. Brian McCants, who I was with in the academy, was shot 6 times in the head with an unarmed man with his own weapon. We're going to be clear to the public, and we're going to preserve the peace by knowing our public and the people that hate law enforcement, hate this community. There's no place for them. Thank you.
Mr. Lamb, there was a recent story of a St. Johns County deputy who previously worked for the University of Florida as a law enforcement officer. He was involved in a shooting to disarm a schizophrenic armed individual. After FDLE cleared the shooting, political pressure from the university forced the law enforcement agency to terminate that employee. The officer who had an outstanding record was unable to find gainful employment and essentially lost his home. If given similar circumstances and the situation, explain how you deal with the political pressures from the county commission or outside influences that are protesting a law enforcement shooting, and how do you protect the integrity of the office and the agency?
Well, not familiar with that situation, but hypothetically, communication. Again, going back to the engagement piece. I do not want the law enforcement, I don't want any law enforcement officer to second guess themselves. We train, we train, we train. I say it three times because it's important to prepare ourselves to use force. We have an excellent opportunity to document use of force as we're required to by the Commission on Florida Accreditation. So, and we're all constantly evaluating not just our training, but our tools upon our belt, such as a taser. The introduction of tasers was a great opportunity. So, sharing that information, first of all, you need to stand behind the men. The men and women need to know that you're going to be behind them when they make that decision. Now, if they step out of lines, we're there to address it. If they need to be terminated, and so be it. But the communication would already be established. The community will know why we're doing what we're doing. The steps are there. So that when we say that it's a justified shooting, they understand it and they accept it and they have that trust. That trust is continuously built upon. Thank you.
Mr. Staley. Sadly, we have seen a new trend in law enforcement called suicide, a new trend in suicide called death by cop. There have been situations here, especially here in Flagler County, one involving now retired Sergeant Mike Van Buren, who defused a gun-wielding woman, and more recently, an incident in European Village of an armed man with a armed woman with a handgun in her purse. Both situations, deadly physical force was not used. So, but at what point does a deputy have the professional judgment to engage and make the decision to utilize invasive or evasive force?
Well, the deputies are trained in a use of force matrix, and it says at what level they can respond to what level of force with force that they're going to use. With that said, in those two cases, because of the training that was provided, both of those deputies performed magnificently, and they legally could have shot and killed those individuals, and they chose not to. They de-escalated it. They communicated with the suspect in this case, and they were able to apprehend them without using deadly force. So my hat's off to both of those deputies for using the training and the skill that they have. It could have very easily been a different situation. There is a phenomenon about suicide by cop, and for whatever reason, my mother was a mental health professional for over 40 years, and it's just a phenomenon that has come up, but they responded perfectly.
Mr. O'Gara, last year, Americans learned of the death of Eric Gardner. In this situation, NYPD street clothes officers approached a man selling Lucy's, which are single cigarettes from a pack without the tax stamp. As the situation escalated, a chokehold occurred lasting less than 20 seconds. This contributed to his death among poor health and positional asphyxiation. In this case, physical strength was not a firearm, was the contributing factor to deadly physical force. When situations to apprehend a suspect escalate, at what point does the method of apprehension become excessive to the infraction of the crime?
In the city of New York Correction Department, I had $64 million in lawsuits against me. None of them stuck because I know the law. I know what I'm supposed to do. In that case, the officers were justified in what they did. Most time, judges won't ask how much was applied. They'll ask, first of all, if it was justified or not. They were justified in doing it. He resisted. They were all found innocent. Thank you.
Mr. Fleming, this past legislative session, State Senator Geraldine Thompson introduced legislation requiring Florida Department of Law Enforcement to investigate any officer-involved fatality in the state. This legislation did have bipartisan support, but the legislation died in committee this past session. But guarantee we will see it again next year. Do you believe oversight and tracking from a state attorney, from a state agency, paints a clear picture as to the contributing factors and correct procedures for the use of deadly physical force?
Could you repeat that? The oversight?
Yeah, the oversight. Do you believe oversight and tracking from a state agency paints a clear picture to the contributing factors and the correct procedures for the use of deadly physical force?
No, I do not. I believe oversight is another tool that is used, but I believe that the agency should have the ability to perform their own investigation and look at what the situation is. And then with the assistance of the federal agents or the Florida Department of Law Enforcement or the state attorney's office, sit down and go over that. I would rather have my own people looking at that and looking at the oversight, not another independent agency someplace up in Tallahassee. I don't believe that works.
Okay. So, gentlemen, I want to move the conversation along to talk about drug enforcement. Drug enforcement has been an essential component of law enforcement. There currently is a movement, including here in Flagler County, led by the sheriff, for the advocation of decriminalization of marijuana. Since 1973, 13 states, Florida not being one of them, have enacted versions of marijuana decriminalization. In each of these states, marijuana users no longer face jail time, nor in most cases arrest or criminal records, for the possession or use of small amounts of marijuana. Studies released supporting this contradict the opinion of the Florida Senate, Sheriff's Association legislative stance on this issue, which they believe you do not criminalize it. So I ask you tonight, where do you stand on the issue of decriminalization of marijuana? And Mr. Staley, I'll start with you, sir.
I think it's another tool that can be used for the discretion of a deputy sheriff, but I would hate for the issuing of a citation be mandated, because there are many times that you apprehend a burglar or some other criminal and you can't quite prove the criminal act of the burglary, and you use that tool to arrest them, get their fingerprints, possibly their DNA, and so forth. So if we're going to decriminalize it as an option for discretion for the deputy, then fine. However, there needs to be lots of quality control on that, because then it'll create other issues. In the states that have decriminalized this and legalized it, the DUIs have gone up, their crashes have gone up, the thefts and robberies have gone up of those facilities that are dispensing it or selling it. So it's not the panacea that some people are asking you to believe it is. Thank you.
Mr. Wisnick.
I do not agree with having a civil violation for marijuana. That's not the answer. Give you a prime example. What is one answer for the federal government does not recognize the state? If you're stopped, say, for instance, on an intercoastal waterway, it's a $5,000 fine, civil penalty for the first offense. The second offense is a felony, and we can seize your boat. I am a chief warrant officer and a federal boarding officer. This is not the answer. We need to have clear results where we wind up not being a third country legalizing things that we don't need to legalize. We need to preserve the peace here and have an interdiction team that stops the flow of drugs here. We do have an inherent problem, and we will have a task force to combat the drugs that we have here in Flagler County. This is not a safe haven for them anymore. Especially the Daytona area is bringing in the drug flow. This drug flow will stop. Thank you.
Mr. Yates.
When it comes to the decriminalization of marijuana under 20 grams, I'm actually for it. As long as there's, like Mr. Staley said, there's not another determining factor. If there's any type of criminal aspect, burglary, anything like that, then that should, the far as the civil citation for the marijuana, should be removed. The reason why they're doing this is because just for a simple under 20 grams marijuana arrest, your deputy or officer is going to take about 45 minutes worth of paperwork, plus the jails and everything else. So they're doing it to save money. The problem that I have with is, from what I understand, and I could be wrong, but the way they have this citation funding, it's going to basically go to the counties or cities or anything, or as a revenue source. I would like that citation money to go to actually narcotics abuse shelters to help people who are addicted to stuff to get off of it. That way, it's cheaper on the taxpayer, and it's will help with the addiction in the future.
Mr. Fleming.
I believe that I wouldn't support that unless it was passed by the state legislators that said it is now a law within the state of Florida. I don't believe that one community next to us, such as Daytona or another community down south, passes that law. Those people still have to drive through other communities, and they're still going to have that problem. I believe that in Colorado, I was reading an article where children are more at a truancy now because of the use of marijuana. I don't. I think narcotics are narcotics, and I would enforce the law until the state passed otherwise.
Mr. Lamb.
Florida State Statute 893.13.6b, possession of marijuana less than 20 grams. It's a state statute, but the same laws allow for law enforcement officers to enact a civil citation. Look, we are a society of second chances, so I believe in second chances for our juveniles. That permanent record will follow them throughout. I mean, it's going to keep them from joining the military, other opportunities for them down the road. And it's by using the civil citation, we can not only gain intelligence, but we can also build on the trust of our younger community. So I'm not totally opposed to it. It is a state law. We'll still enforce it. When you issue the civil citation, if you want to make a physical arrest, you note in there why you did. Possibly a burglary suspect. So you have that discretion, and the officers do. So that's still there. That's not taking the discretion away, and that's important. But moving forward, we need to constantly strengthen the relationships with the community. And I think giving our young generation a second chance is a great opportunity. I'm looking forward to that. Thank you.
Mr. O'Gara.
The Public Safety Coordinating Council meetings that are held once a month by the county commissioners and the sheriff's office, I've been attending them for the last 2 years. I've gone to more of them than the sheriff has. This is where this discussion started from. No, 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 I'm not in favor of it. If this thing is about saving money, last year the Flagler County had 88 incidents, so we saved 88 hours. Really? That's what we're trying to save money on? If this was Miami and they had 4,000 arrests, it would might make some sense as far as financial, but I think it's a tool. You arrest the perp, you bring him in, you get intelligence from him. I think this is just another crazy progressive idea. If it becomes state law, then we have to do it. We're the sheriff. But right now, Beverly Beach can do it. Palm Coast doesn't have to do it. Flagler Beach can do it, and Bernal doesn't do it. So then what are we going to do? Someone has a previous arrest, because it only happens one time.
So a follow-up question to this. The sheriff has also been an outspoken advocate for the legalization of medical marijuana. He appeared on morning TV in Orlando for this subject. Once again, this is a clear divisive stance from what the Florida Sheriff's Association believes in, and where they wholeheartedly oppose the future Amendment 2 ballot initiative that we as voters will be voting on this November, citing legalization will jeopardize public safety. What is your stance on legalization of marijuana? Mr. Wisnett, we'll start with you, sir.
My father died of lung cancer and five chemotherapy treatments. We're the coalition of doctors saying that this serves a purpose. I don't believe this is the answer. I'm not a doctor, but this is not the answer. We're not trying to get votes here. This needs to be decided by a coalition of doctors with education. This is not going to be decided by a sheriff that does not have the education to make that answer. I know what it's like to lose a loved one on Easter Sunday, but I know a team of doctors and having trust in our faith and our medical staff did the best to comfort my father during that time. This is not the answer, and this is not a decision for the sheriff. It's a decision for the coalition of doctors and medical professions not to obtain votes. Thank you.
Mr. Yates.
I do have, I also have a history with a family member who had cancer. The doctors pumped them full of pain pills and other type of narcotics to alleviate the pain and everything, and I saw what those pills did to them. Mr. Wisnata is correct. It should be the legislature that makes the law or passes the law. It's not the sheriff. They just uphold the law and enforce them. But I will tell you that when medical marijuana did come through, the family member I am talking about, it assisted them and got them off of the pain pills because it was destroying their life quicker than the medical marijuana. I'm not a marijuana smoker. I never have been. No, I did try it once in 10th grade, but it gave me a migraine and I can't do it anymore. So as I'm not for medical or marijuana smoking, if it will alleviate the addiction of pain pills, the Oxycontin and the Dilaudids and everything that are just flowing through, especially young kids nowadays, then I am for it.
Mr. Fleming.
I think the term medical marijuana is probably the most crucial thing here. If you're going to give it to a terminally ill person to alleviate pain, yes. But I believe medical marijuana is just like any other drug that's out there. My experience, when you would stop a car and you'd find marijuana, you'd also find cocaine, you also find pills. But I believe that the state legislator and the Sheriff's Association, in their infinite wisdom, if they don't believe it's something that should be passed, it should be something that should be enforced. And they should use discretion and not worry about whether they're going to be arrested or not. They will be if they use marijuana. Thank you.
Mr. Lamb.
Well, and I agree with that. Medical marijuana, and there's already forms of medical marijuana that are deployed, such as Charlotte's Web for the individuals who have epilepsy, but it's an extract. So the technology is there. It's not necessarily a smoking form. But I have four children, and if any one of my children needed some type of medical relief and the only form they could get it was marijuana, then yes, believe it, I would do it. As a parent, I would do that. I'm a realist, okay? So, but the oversight needs to be there. I mean, there are so much more dangerous drugs right now than marijuana, and we see prescription drug abuse. So I'm looking forward to ensuring that the oversight's there and that the regulation's there, that we can. So if you are in possession of unlicensed marijuana, then you can actually receive a greater charge than what you receive now. So, but again, like I said, I have children, and if they needed it, I would do anything to relieve their pain. So, yes. Thank you.
Mr. O'Gara.
John's correct with the oversight. That's the important thing. I was out in L.A. recording in a recording studio where it's medical marijuana is legal. Everybody had a vial of it because they couldn't sleep, because their tooth hurt, because they had every reason. Everybody had it. It gets out of control, become like the pain mill, the pill mills around here. It's going to take a lot of resources if that goes through. Of course, we don't want young adults and people to be in pain. But it's going to take a lot of oversight. And if it's the law, we'll enforce the law.
Mr. Staley.
Well, as your sheriff, it's my job to enforce the law, not make the law. I can tell you that the reason the Florida Sheriff Association is not in favor of the current amendment is because it is an amendment. They would prefer it to be passed if Florida is going to have medical marijuana expanded besides Charlotte's Web and a few other things that just got expanded as a state law. And the reason for that is it is much easier to fix a state law for unintended consequences than a constitutional amendment. That's the issue that the sheriffs have with this. I don't think any of us sitting up here tonight would want to withhold a medication that could help someone in their dying days, or a small child that has severe epilepsy or some of the other things that some of the people that are supporting this say that it works for. I'm not a medical person. We'll enforce the law. It's up to the legislature to implement it.
As a final follow-up, marijuana has forever been dubbed the gateway drug, which eventually opens the pathway to other substances. Over the years, we have seen a rise in synthetic marijuana, which proved to be more physically harmful than the actual organically grown marijuana. And at one point, Florida was the pill mill capital, and the use of opioid and painkillers were uncontrollable. Today, there is a new drug out there, heroin. the heroin usage has begun to rise and become a public epidemic. The ease and access for the cost of heroin has made it more appealing. To put it in perspective, an average 1 milligram pain pill is roughly $1 a milligram. A pack of cigarettes is about $6 in Florida. You can sometimes get a bag of heroin for $5. Now, the Florida legislature has approved public access to Narcan, which is the opioid antagonist that can stop an overdose, which essentially agrees that we do have the problem, but now here's just a temporary solution to prevent overdoses. In your opinions, how do we combat this epidemic? Mr. Fleming, I'll start with you, sir.
I would reflect back on Richard Nixon way back in the time when he declared a war on drugs, and he lost. And narcotics, especially heroin, in the 70s and 80s was almost 85% pure, and people were using that drug constantly. Then it went down and then went off the shelf for a while, came back at 90% pure, and people were dying of overdoses left and right. It's an epidemic. Narcotics is an epidemic of everything. You have marijuana with heroin in it. You have marijuana with angel dust in it. There's problems. There's problems out there that I don't know how we're going to be able to fix narcotics in this country, but there's definitely some avenue that needs to be explored and looked at. And I believe that these types of things, heroin especially, if we can come up with some kind of thing that would save a life, then we should have maybe the deputies that carry these things when we have them. Thank you.
Mr. Lamb.
Well, first, the Narcan is a great tool, and the deputies should have it in case they encounter an individual with an overdose. Of course, they need to be trained in it. That's a long, drawn-out question, and a minute's going to be difficult. So here you go. Multiple-prong attack. First, cut off the supply. I-95 is the common denominator between Northeast Florida. Volusia, Flagler, St. John's, Duval, Nassau. I have an excellent working relationship with Sheriff Leeper, Sheriff Williams, and Sheriff Shore. Looking forward to building a relationship with the new-to-be sheriff in Volusia County in Putnam. We need to have a strong police presence along I-95 to shut off the supply, the demand. We need to identify the users. We need to give them the help they need with the addiction. We also need to be in the schools. Gang resistance education and training, as the Florida Sheriff Association approved training to be in the schools, both in the elementary and the middle schools. DARE is a great program. Great's better. Looking forward to implementing that. Safety education officers in the schools, in the middle schools, in the elementary schools. We work with our children. We work with those who are addicted to it. We cut off the supply, cut off the demand. We can have a positive impact. Thank you.
Mr. O'Gara.
You want to have a big, big impact on the heroin trade, go to the jails. The guys that are in there for using it, they will give you information in due time. Just go in there with a McDonald's hamburger twice and they'll give everybody up. Also, the strange thing about where medical marijuana has been introduced and recreational, heroin use goes up. The heroin trade, they're great marketers. They lower the price of the heroin because now they're competing with the marijuana. So if that marijuana stuff happens here, expect the heroin to go up.
Mr. Staley.
Well, as I mentioned previously, the unintended consequences, and this is a prime example of that. When we clamped down on the pill mills, then the next thing you saw was a resurgence of crack cocaine and now heroin coming in because it's cheaper than going out and buying an oxycodone or something like that on the black market. So to solve it, you have to do strict enforcement. There's clearly a nexus on the drug trade coming out of Orlando up US 1 and into Flagler County and coming out of Daytona into Flagler County. Strict enforcement. Then you have to do prevention. You also have to properly fund treatment. And that's the problem that the state has never properly funded is the treatment. You have to reduce the number of users, and that will reduce the demand for the drug. So if you do those three, you can have success. The problem is, in my 40 years in law enforcement, I've never seen any of it properly funded to have any real impact.
Mr. Wisnett.
if you look at my Facebook and you get a chance, I announced majority of my platform. And one of part of my platform was have a suppression team on I-95, not only on I-95, on our waterways where drug trafficking is coming. And it's coming through our counties, preying on our youth. There will be no boundaries. I will work directly with the task force, with the surrounding counties, and also with the federal and local law enforcement. The federal being the FBI, having a task force where there's no boundaries, where the drug trade's coming in. The Coast Guard and the unit that I was in several years ago seized $5 billion worth of cocaine, $12 million worth of cash. We will work hand in hand with our federal agencies, and we will alleviate this problem. This is not a safe haven for the drug dealers here. They can find another home. Thank you.
Mr. Yates.
As far as the Narcan go, I personally witnessed it save the same guy's life twice. He's addicted to or overdosed on heroin, was blue in the face when we got there. The paramedics gave it to him, and he sat up within seconds like he just woke up out of bed. I could never sit there and watch somebody die when I could sit there and do something to save them. Even the addicts have family members, and their life is precious. So whatever we can do to save them, I am for, as far as Narcan goes. All these guys are right with the narcotic stuff. It's killing this country. From the feds all the way down, they don't do enough. You know, our current sheriff dismantled your narcotics unit. I don't know if you know that. There used to be four or five men and women that went out there on a daily basis and combated our narcotics problem. Last time I heard, and I'm not the sheriff, but there's only one that's really doing narcotics anymore. As citizens, is that good for you? It's not for me, and I will fix it.
Thank you. As of recent, the Flagler County Sheriff's Office has been riddled with a lot of headlines concerning employees. The problems we have seen are attributed to reclassification of rank, termination of senior staff, retirements, and a revolving door of personnel. One would say the agency lacks the institutional knowledge to keep the younger guys safe. The result of this and some of the headlines we've seen probationary members terminated. We've seen a wrongful arrest due to a name mix-up. If you are elected sheriff, please tell us tonight, how do you fix what has been done and how do you restore a sense of stability? Mr. Lamb, we'll start with you, sir.
Well, you lead by example, first and foremost, being a Florida-certified law enforcement. I understand. I've been doing it for 23 years. A great professional career. Never, ethics have never been questioned, and I've enjoyed it. So training. We constantly train. You have policies and procedures in place to ensure that everybody understands their role within the sheriff's office. Flagler County right now is the second lowest in Northeast Florida, next to Putnam. You need to be competitive. Step raises is a step in the right direction. I totally believe step raises is great. We need to keep the veteran officers here so you keep that institutional knowledge. When you step in as a sheriff, you recognize the skills that you have within the agency and you properly place everybody to make it effective. You have to have a good talent for leadership and recognition and skills. So understanding that the majority of the people leave an agency for four things. First and foremost, they're not treated with dignity and respect. They're not rewarded with more responsibilities when they show a set of competence. They're not listened to and pay. The first three don't cost anything. Thank you very much.
Mr. O'Gara.
So we're speaking about the young deputies. Young deputies need training. I was 22 when I went on. You have to know your job. We can give you training. We have reserve officers. In Flagler County, we have so many resources that are willing to help, but this current sheriff won't let them help. That will teach people their experiences, their careers. They also need better money. It's ridiculous. For $3 less, they can stand in Home Depot and say, "Welcome to Home Depot," and not get shot at. We have to train them better, give them confidence, and give them a salary that makes them want to stay here and not go elsewhere.
Mr. Staley.
Well, the current sheriff has dismantled the hiring practices and lowered them. There's been significant changes in the last year, so it starts with the hiring process to get the best qualified people. It also starts with applicants that want to come work here and not go to another agency, so it takes leadership to do that. They want to come work with you. The other thing, you absolutely do have to pay a fair wage. And even though this community has been hit heavily in the 10 years that I've lived here with economic recession, it's bounding back and it's on the verge of the next big push for growth. When I was the undersheriff in Orange County, we moved that agency from under the Orlando Police Department lower pay and benefits to the top. And unfortunately, now it's slid back and everyone wants to go to OPD now instead of the sheriff's office. You have to make a good work environment, pay them properly, and do the proper backgrounds.
Mr. Wisnett.
There again, it starts with leadership, empowering your personnel to feel that they have ownership in the community. By empowering your personnel and giving them the tools that they need, they may not always leave for money, but if it's their internal strife, which we will alleviate, because just like that mirror in the back I paid attention to, we're going to look in the mirror every day and make sure that we're leading by example. I am not going to manage police officers. That is fundamentally impossible. They are leaders. We're going to work together. I'm going to look at this organizational chart for the third, fourth, and fifth time, and if it doesn't make sense, we're not going to have an organizational chart that doesn't make fundamental sense. Since 1790, the Coast Guard has worked the chain of command, and it ebbs and flows in both directions. And sometimes as a leader, you have to look at yourself in that mirror to make sure that you're making the right decision, because this is a privilege to serve. And the men and women out there that serve, they need help, and it's from you. Thank you.
Mr. Yates.
First off, what I want to do is create a recruitment team, including myself, upper command, all the way down to new officers. We're going to go to all the police academies in the surrounding counties, and we're going to recruit the best of the best. We'll look at their files, we'll do everything, and ask them, and I don't care if I have to beg them, to get the creme of the creme to the agency. Next thing, as far as retention, we have specialized divisions in this county, and the deputies there's no incentive pay for them. We call them and say, hey, we need a pond checked, and we send them, get them in a dive suit, stick them in this water, could have alligators in it, and they don't get anything extra. They get the regular pay, maybe overtime if they're not currently on duty. So all the specialized units need to have incentive pay. As far as the pay scale as it is, these deputies, I mean, we work on a day, we risk our lives for peanuts today for the future. My time's up, so I'm not going to keep going, but thank you.
Mr. Fleming.
Thank you, Pat. I think I have said this earlier. I think when Sheriff Manfrey came in with his administration, they tore it apart. They got rid of experienced law enforcement officers with 20-plus years in the agency. Now we have an agency that has probably 2 to 3 years of experience on the road because all the good deputies have left. We don't have any training officers now down in Daytona at the academy. So we don't get to pick the cream of the crop. We get to pick what's left. When I was sheriff, we had a training division that was second to none. And we had people wanting to come from the police academies here in Daytona and St. John. And we will restore that as we go. Thank you.
And our final question this evening, the administrative duties of sheriff includes the oversight of road patrol, but also the county inmate facility. Throughout the news, we have heard of horror stories coming out of our state prison system, including the death of 19-year-old Carl Westgate, a Palm Coast resident who was sentenced to 25 years for molesting an 11-year-old girl. He died 48 days after incarceration. At the Flagler County inmate facility, Kathleen Filer, a 57-year-old Palm Coast resident, died while being in custody after being arrested for contempt of court charge. How do you, as sheriff, ensure that our county jail is a safe environment for the inmates and the staff? Mr. O'Gara, we'll start with you, sir.
Wow, a jail question. I go first now. Yeah. That was a tragedy. Lady came in, and she died because there was no medical staff on. Now the lawsuit that's going to result because of it is probably going to be about three times what it would cost to put someone on that shift. It's just a tragedy. There's no excuse for it. I'm not going to give you operational details on how this works. This is a simple thing here. They messed up. They should have had someone there 24/7, medical staff. They're supposed to be seen before they're housed. They're supposed to be seen for mental health and their physical health before they're put into a housing area.
Mr. Staley.
Well, the fact is that the jail medical probably forever has not been properly funded and properly staffed. They're providing the service using part-time paramedics and a part-time physician, and that needs to change. But it's about $750,000 a year to do it, and nobody wants to add that to their budget. You can outsource it about the same price. The new jail that was built, it's about to open, has a medical ward for the first time, and it needs to be properly staffed, and every person is arrested should be seen by a licensed practitioner to go through all the medical history to determine whether they need further care or better watching and so forth. In this case, from what I understand, some signs were missed and they accepted her at the jail, and shortly thereafter she died. It's going to be an expensive fix, but it's time for Flagler County to take that plunge and do it right, because a lawsuit will be critically expensive.
Mr. Wisnett.
I'm not going to judge that circumstance without looking at all the evidence of the case, but I will tell you it comes from training, and training being paramount itself. And there again, therapeutic handling of the mentally ill. We're going to properly train our officers where they're better equipped. We're going to treat it as a life-saving organization. Where I came from, the United States Coast Guard, where we treat our first responders as first responders, where they're going to be cross-trained in medical procedures, just in case that medical personnel does not reach at times. We're going to look at the jail itself and make sure that the officers there need the equipment that they have, and the people that are incarcerated or maybe detained because of mental illness are properly handled. Thank you.
Mr. Yates.
First off, on the intake side of the jail, there should always be monitored for the first 8 hours that you're there. That's yours. Normally where your DUIs or domestic violence people go, they go into what's called an intake cell, and they're basically monitored for the first 8 hours they're there, and or unless they see first appearance first. As far as the medical staff, Mr. Staley is correct. It's insufficient. If somebody has a serious issue, you're basically waiting for the paramedics to get out there, and it's a ways. So they need to increase the medical staff. It has to, the intake system has to be monitored for at least the first 8 hours until if they're going to be put into a more permanent holding facility, then it'll be different. But as far as your intake, also, they need to look at what they're in there for. Were they tased? Were they pepper sprayed? Was there any type of situation that could lead into something, you know, allergies, heart conditions, anything like that? That has to be known, and that way they can monitor it.
Mr. Flood.
Thank you. There's no quick fix for the mentally ill in our jails. There's things that we need to look at. We need to train our correction people. How to recognize things. We have to add additional correctional people that check on these people in the jail cells on a continual basis. And we have to bite the bullet, and we have to have a medical staff that's in the hospital that's able to treat what we have to treat. I understood before that we were on demand there. When I was sheriff, we rose it up to 45, which is what the standard was in the contract. And I believe that it could probably double now with the 500 beds that we now just inherited.
Mr. Lamb.
Well, I actually started out my career in corrections, so I had the opportunity of working for Jacksonville Sheriff's Office Correctional Facility, and it's professional.
Florida jail standards dictates operations within a correctional facility. Additionally, I know the Flagler County Sheriff's Office is working towards accreditation. That's identifying best practices within a correctional facility and ensuring that they're complying with the standards of those best practices. So that's a step that I want to see through, actually becoming accredited and the medical staff being accredited. So that, with that said, that mitigates the possibility of in-custody death. In-custody death does happen in large, you know, correctional facilities. But hopefully with those, we can mitigate that. But interesting enough, the money's there. One thing I bring a perspective to is with the continuous improvement mindset with Lean and Six Sigma is I can find waste within the agency and allocate that money to the full-time medical staff. There's waste, be it duplication of effort, fuel costs, paper waste, downtime, and we can find the best value within the agency to ensure that we're being good stewards of the money. That's something I bring to the Flagler County Sheriff's Office, and I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Gentlemen, for the last almost 2 hours, we've had a good discussion on issues relating to law enforcement to try to educate both the folks here tonight and our listeners on WNZF. Tonight, you now have your final opportunity to address the folks on why you should be elected sheriff of Flagler County. You have 2 minutes as a closing statement. And Mr. Staley, we will start with you, sir.
Well, I started out saying I'm not a politician, and I'm not. What I am is a 40-year cop, 30 years full-time, second in command of the Orange County Sheriff's Office, where I commanded 2,000 men and women, $120 million budget. When I retired, I went into the private sector for almost 10 years. I started my own company, saved 60 jobs locally, when I started a security guard and patrol company in the height of the Great Recession, and then grew it to 128 employees and $3.5 million a year in revenue, and then sold it to a national firm. I'm the only guy running that has had a successful business career and a successful law enforcement career. I was shot on duty. I understand what it's like to be a street cop saving the life of a deputy sheriff. I don't think you can get any more knowing what it's like to be a street cop than getting shot. And fortunately, by the grace of God, in a bulletproof vest, I was here to talk about it tonight. So I think those are my credentials. I have a master's degree, commanded a $23 million budget at Flagler County and 270 employees there. So I bring the most experience in leadership and business experience to the job. And on August 30th or during early voting or mail-in voting, I ask for your vote. Your safety is the most important vote that you're going to make this election season, especially in local politics. It will be my honor to serve you and my duty and my men and women that work with me, duty to protect you. Thank you.
Mr. Wisnett.
What we're going to do together, we're going to empower the deputies to take pride in this organization again, bring back leadership, be accountable for their actions, and also be accountable for my actions as your sheriff. And training is paramount. Some of the bad events that we've seen throughout the past in Charleston, we're going to better train our officers to a proficiency where they're able to make the appropriate decision. As a chief warrant officer in the United States Coast Guard, which there's only 23 in the United States, I have the administrative skills and the leadership skills to make our community safe, which is part of Homeland Security, working together hand in hand with our federal organizations. I am responsible for the area of Brunswick all the way up to North Carolina, which involves nuclear subs, in the Brunswick area, also in the Charleston area, the training area. We can do miracles if we work together. I have 25 years law enforcement experience, but it's not the number, the years of experience. It's a passion and a love for this community that I have. And we're working together hand in hand, not casting stones, being transparent, and having a life-saving organization that works hand-in-hand that better equips. It's not what I can do. It's what we can do as a community and we're going to empower our community together again to make it a safer community and take pride in leadership. This is not a business, and I'm not going to treat it as a business. We're going to treat it as a living, breathing thing. I have a master's degree in human services, which help people, and we're going to look at the objectives and make sure that we're working hand in hand, and we're going to measure these objectives. This is not a business. Sometimes people do not want to work at a business. We're going to treat it as a community that has a pulse. Thank you.
Mr. Yates.
First off, thank you for coming. I appreciate everybody attending to listen to all the gentlemen up here. Some of the things that I want to make sure that you know that I want to make sure that the sheriff's office is doing. I want to bring back the morale of the sheriff's office. It's the worst I've seen in any agency I've ever dealt with. Fix the organizational structure of the agency. Go back to a more traditional rank structure. Right now you ask somebody who's that, and it's Commander so-and-so or Commander so-and-so, and they don't. One's senior, one's not. It needs to go back to a more traditional rank structure so everybody knows who everybody is and as far as the rank. We need to create reestablish the crime suppression unit. In Holly Hill, we have one. Excuse me. It's four officers. We're a small agency, but it combats the riffraff that comes from Daytona on a daily basis. We have to do that in Flagler County. We have to implement the narcotics team again, get them working with the crime suppression unit, and fix it. I talked about the recruitment team and the incentive pay already. The other thing I want to talk about is future leaders program. I want our deputies to interact with the kids from the community, whether it's play sports with them, bring them out, have a cookout, mentor them, show up at their house after school if they need help with their homework. Because I'll tell you, if we don't take care of our children now, there's drug dealers and gang members that are going to prey on them tomorrow. So we have to focus in on children. Look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you a bunch of stuff that you haven't heard already, but I'm dedicated to this community. Not to say anything against these guys, because they got a lot of experience. I'm the only one that really needs to work. The rest of them have pensions and other stuff going on. So when I get into office, I'm going to work for you on a daily basis. So,
Mr. Fleming.
Thank you. I'm impressed with everybody up here on the dais. They're all intelligent young men running for an office. I'm the only one here that has been your sheriff for 8 years. I'm the only one that I could take that office tomorrow and continue what I left when I left. I know everybody in the county. I've been in this county since 1998. I know every nook and cranny of the county and know the problems of each little city or municipality. I'm a decorated Vietnam veteran. I'm a college professor. I taught college for 17 years at Fairleigh Dickinson University, part-time. I was raised through the ranks. I was a captain, did narcotics, decorated police officer, a member of New Jersey Police Honor Legion. I'm a cop's cop. I'm, like Rick says, I'm not really a politician, but I'm a professional at what I do. And I would like to bring that professionalism back to this agency so I can leave my legacy when I do eventually pass away, but I'm going to last a lot longer than these guys here. They know that. And my legacy would be that I restored that agency and I restored the pride to the men and women in that agency that have worked hard. That's their careers. That's their love. That's their passion. And I believe I can provide that leadership again to make it their love and their pride and their passion. And with the support of the community and with the support of the men and women of the agency, that is what I intend to do. I thank you all for the opportunity to be here tonight. Thank you, Patrick.
Mr. Lamb.
Jeremiah 29:11. I know what I have in store for you, declares the Lord. A path of hope and not of despair. As I began this journey last year, it's been a journey. I've been engaged with so many people, and I'm a better person for it. I understand community engagement, the first D. I understand efficiency. Flagler County Sheriff's Office is not a business. Businesses make money. Flagler County Sheriff's Office spends money. You need to be a good steward of that money to ensure that you're being efficient, and with that efficiency comes the better effectiveness. Through DMAIC, define, measure, analyze, improve, and control. Traditional law enforcement is a tool. We need to be constantly improving our policing techniques. As an active law enforcement, Chris, I am still working. I'm not in a pension plan. As an active law enforcement, I am looking forward to bringing modern policing techniques to Flagler County Sheriff's Office. This is where my wife and I have decided that we want to live the next part of our life. Our kids are going to start here in August, and we're very excited. Engaged, efficient, effective, energetic. Anybody who's sat, stood, talked with me recognizes that I am energized. I am excited about bringing enthusiasm to the Flagler County Sheriff's Office and to the community of Flagler County. I'm bringing ethical professional law enforcement, ethical, synonymous with integrity, uncompromising integrity. My ethics have never been put in question. My integrity is never. That badge I wear upon my chest shines brighter today than when I first put it on because of the life I've led and the profession I left. And I want to continue for it to shine bright as a Flagler County Sheriff's badge. Ethical, enthusiastic, energetic, excited. So a lot of ease, I know. But that's me. And that's what I bring to Flagler County Sheriff's Office. I want to see the agency grow to its fullest potential, not to the next step, to its fullest potential. I want to see this community grow. We know it's going to get larger. We need to put someone in there who's young, energetic, and is going to see the foundation put in place for the men and women who wear that badge. And I do that to honor them, and I do it to honor you. August 30th, early voting August 15th. Please see me after this if you have any additional questions. I thank you.
Mr. Lamb. I'm sorry, Mr. O'Gara.
Okay. Thank you. I want to make sure nobody confuses longevity and resumes with honesty and managerial ability. Sheriff's office is broken at the top. Ethics, integrity, and the trust in the sheriff is paramount. The deputies need job security and a non-hostile work environment in order to be the best they can be. When they are performing best, our quality of life and property values improve. All the textbook warrior explanations that we heard here today are useless if management and frontline staff aren't working together. Got to straighten out the top. I'll put in a great chief deputy that's working in that agency today. I will assign a person and create a warden's position. I'll pay attention to all aspects of the criminal justice system, not just law enforcement. Because previous administrations didn't pay attention to them, we have a $16 million jail sitting empty when it could have been better spent on a senior center. We're going to get them back on track. We're going to be a model for all Florida sheriff's associations. I've been here 47 years. I took a trip here with my parents and ITT. Since I was 13 years old, I wanted to be here. 20 years ago, I started visiting my parents annually. 18 years ago, I started paying taxes on my property. 9 years, I brought my entire family to live right here in Palm Coast. My daughter went to FPC. I joined several community organizations. I went to numerous city and county and public safety meetings to understand the people and the landscape here. I will give you 100%, even though I get a pension, I still have a wife.
Tonight's discussion here has been great, and I really want to thank all the candidates. So please join me in another round of applause for all of our candidates. So on your way out, we hope that, and we encourage you to take part in our straw poll. It is a fundraising opportunity. It is a $5 donation, a limit of one per person, and the straw poll sales will be available for the next 30 minutes. The results, if we have enough public participation, will be published tomorrow. And a portion of those proceeds from the straw poll will be donated to the AmericanFlagProject.org, which is a national get-out-the-vote effort. The American Flag Project believes in an American flag distribution program can and will promote patriotism and voter participation in local, state, and national elections. The program includes a basic American flag etiquette and nonpartisan voter values card, which will be delivered with each American flag. And there's going to be another sheriff's debate with all the sheriff candidates on hosted by the Coastal Florida PBA on June 22nd at the Portuguese American Cultural Society. On behalf of the Flagler County Young Republicans, I'd like to extend our deepest appreciation to all of you being here for this evening. It's no easy task running for sheriff, so candidates, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your vision for the future of Flagler County Sheriff's Office. And for those of you here and those that have joined us streaming worldwide on WNZF.com or have listened tonight on the radio at WNZF 1550 AM or 106.3 FM, we appreciate you joining in with us as well. Please do follow us on Facebook at Facebook/FlaglerYR. We're on Twitter at FlaglerYR and at Instagram at FlaglerYRs. Please take advantage of following us on social media as we are your most energized and exciting young professional Republican organization here in Flagler County. And to all of our sponsors that made this broadcast possible, Don Fleming, John Lamb, Rick Staley, Mark Wisnett, and Chris Yates, I thank all of you. And I wish you all safe travels home and ask that St. Michael, patron saint of law enforcement officers, watch over and guard all of our brave men and women protecting and serving us. And we have gone on well past our extended time, and we have interrupted the Savage Show. So with that, we would like to apologize to Michael Savage and return WNZF back to its regular scheduled program. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us.